The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
It is, and it's another brand new week. Aren't we excited about that? Yeah, baby. Welcome to it. Hey, it's Monday. And, you know, as happens really just about every week, on Friday, it was one breaking news story after another. I'm telling you, and they started breaking actually while we were still on the air, but we were in the middle of something. It was an important discussion actually on Friday with Sasha Abramski writing for The Nation about what could potentially happen around this election. Because, frankly, Donald Trump's supporters are crazy. And I don't mean that in a good way. I don't mean that in a fun way. I mean they are batshit off the wall, sociopathically crazy. These people, they're armed and, I think, dangerous. And they have some weird cult-like devotion to their dear leader, who is frightening in his own right. I think that's an important topic. How do we get, look, we've got three different phases coming up that we're going to need to deal with. One is the one we're in now, the period between now and November 3rd, when Donald Trump will keep ratcheting up the fear while he tells you, I'm trying to keep calm. I'm keeping everybody calm. Because to Donald Trump, I guess there's no like position of being concerned and honest with the American people about why you're concerned. No, with him, it's either, well, you lie to the American people and downplay things, like, you know, like he said.
Hold on, I gotta turn this one down.
Gotta keep turning things down. Why do I have a sound coming through? Oh, I hate it when this happens. Oh, I bet maybe it's leaking through here. Could that be it? Okay, perfect. All right, so first, you know, this is his stance, right?
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
Yes, sir.
Because I don't want to create a panic.
Doesn't want to create a panic. So that was the one thing he said in those recordings to Bob Woodward that he could glom onto to give himself kind of an out. Oh, didn't want to create a panic. I was the picture of calm. And so to now Donald Trump, to hear him, there's only two ways. You're either playing it down so as not to, you know, commit panic, not to sow panic, or you...
There has to be a calmness. You don't want me jumping up and down screaming, there's going to be great death, there's going
to... It's either a calmness or you're jumping up and down screaming, there's going to be a great death. Right? There's no steady, strong hand saying, here's the reality. This is a serious pandemic. It's a novel virus. We've never seen it before, so we don't know exactly how it will manifest itself. We don't know the long-term ramifications. There's so much we don't know, so we need to remain strong and steady and keep a handle on it. That's not jumping up and down. That's not saying the house is on fire, but it's also not lying to the American people, which is all this idiot knows how to do. So, but I digress. I started off by talking about how on Friday, you know, finished the show and it was like one story after another. And I felt like I had to like keep track because first we learned that a federal prosecutor working with John Durham, you know, the Durham investigation on the origins, not oranges, the origins of the Russia investigation. This is, you know, this is a trumped up investigation that Donald put his boy Billy Barr on so that he'd have something to talk about. Because, you know, his whole shtick about Obamagate and they spied on my campaign, is all
bullshit.
It's all
bullshit.
It's all
bullshit.
What you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening.
Yeah, because he's a gaslighter, because he's just making shit up to scare you. So they started this Durham investigation, which apparently will not be done before the election, but Donald Trump wants something out before the election to influence the election, even though they're technically not supposed to do that, like what Jim Comey did 4 years ago, that he wasn't supposed to do. You don't release anything within a certain time frame close to the election. And I believe we're in there now. But Donald Trump doesn't care about rules and laws. Are you kidding? He just wants things to fall his way. Because as you've noticed, anything that's even slightly critical of Donald Trump is fake news. It doesn't matter what the substance of the report is. If it's critical of him, it's fake news. So anyway, again, I digress. What happened Friday, we learned that the federal prosecutor, a woman named Nora Danahy, who was the right-hand person to John Durham, quit. She resigned. And word is, she didn't, you know, in her letter of resignation, she didn't really give the reasons. But the word is that she felt political pressure from Barr, who was pushing for some kind of interim report, because the main thing won't be ready before Election Day, and they don't ever issue interim reports. And she is a career prosecutor and in the U.S. Attorney's Office. And, you know, here's another thing that I have a problem with about Trump. They always, you know, they go batshit crazy on the deep state. Ooh, the deep state. Oh, no, the deep state. You know what the deep state is? The deep state, if I can get into their warped mindset for a moment, those are the people who've been working in the federal government for years, for decades, from one administration to another, from, doesn't matter if they're Democrats or Republicans, these are the people who do the work, who provide the continuity to keep our government running. Well, because Donald Trump doesn't trust anybody who's not one of his hand-picked minions, he trusts nobody. So anybody who, God forbid, worked under Barack Obama has to be one of those dirty Democrats, therefore the deep state. And while he's trying to purge government of all these people who've been making it run for so many years, they make sure it's not working at all. So anyway, we got the news about Danahy resigning. Then a little later on Friday night, we learned that Trump's political appointees at the Centers for Disease Control had been reviewing the reports from the scientists at the CDC on the pandemic and changing them to better align with Trump's message that the U.S. is beating the virus. It gets worse from there. You remember Michael Caputo, who was one of Trump's mouthpieces who would go all over TV? Well, in April, he was appointed Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs of the Department of Health and Human Services. And now what we're learning from a whistleblower is that Michael Caputo and his deputies repeatedly requested pre-publication access to the CDC's weekly morbidity and mortality reports and reportedly altered them in several cases since April to lessen the seeming severity of COVID-19. Unbelievable. And it goes on. There was more. And you know what? We'll get to a lot of these stories that I piled up with Marcy Wheeler. Yep, I was finally able to get her today. Marcy Wheeler has moved over to Ireland, but thankfully she's still watching out for things around here. And we'll talk to her in just a few minutes. But needless to say, yeah, there's so much to get to. And now I'm kind of glad that I wasn't able to get Marcy last week, because there's like four or five stories that I want to talk to her about. So never fear, we'll get to all of those. But before we get to those, I got to do this. Now, I read this article a few weeks ago, And I didn't comment on it then because I honestly didn't know what to say about it. But I guess it must have been about a month or so ago that I read a piece, an article in LGBTQNation.com about Randy Rainbow. Now, you know I'm a big Randy Rainbow fan. I think he's way talented. I think he's really funny. I think he's adorable. And he's sort of just what the doctor ordered when we first started hearing his videos, song parodies having to do with Trump. What, maybe like 18 months ago, 2 years ago now? It's been a while. But I'm just going to read to you a little bit from this LGBTQ Nation article that's the follow-up to the one I read, because Randy Rainbow has a new video out today. And it's a good one, and most of his are. But I had a little bit of a back and forth with myself. It's like, okay, what do I do? And I figured what I do is tell you the story. I think he addresses the issue in this song parody, so this is why I want to tell you the story before I play it, to get your thoughts on it. All right, so what happened is, many years ago, when he was a young baby wannabe comedian, he got on Twitter and he made some very unfunny jokes. And really not funny. And let me just read to you how this article puts it. They write, political satirist Randy Rainbow apologized for the dozens of racist, anti-Semitic, misogynist, and transphobic tweets he wrote years ago that resurfaced, well, it says earlier this week. When was it? August 21st. So it was the week of August 21st. So it was less than a month ago. It was only a few weeks ago. Here's a quote from Randy Rainbow. He said in an interview with The Advocate about this, they make me sick to my stomach, in fact, and I deeply apologize to anyone offended. Twitter users passed around a spreadsheet that listed tweets Rainbow wrote from 2010 on that called Black and Hispanic people violent criminals, gratuitously used slurs like, sorry, I'm going to say it, tranny, made light of rape, and otherwise played on stereotypes of various minorities. In one tweet, he wrote, why is it okay to call it a white noise machine, yet offensive to say that I bought it to drown out all the black noise in my building? Yeah, that's bad. Then another one, fun new project in the works. I'd tell you, but then I'd have to rape you. And then here's a third. My new drag name is transvaginal mesh, tranny mesh for short. I you know what, I play the rim shot, but they don't even warrant that because they're not funny, they're offensive. The article goes on to say the offensive tweets continued to at least as late as 2014 when he was making jokes about black people and fried chicken. Randy Rainbow, what the fuck? Well, here's a quote. Again, from his interview with The Advocate, he said, Twitter has recently reminded me about 10 years ago in my maiden quest to be funny, I tweeted some jokes that were completely offensive and insensitive to look back on them now, especially with no context or nuance and through the prism of where we are in 2020 with racial inequality and the fight for social justice, which I'm proudly a part of, he said this week. In light of issues that are now at the forefront, which I'm passionate about and have spoken up about over the years, these tweets just sound racist and awful. I'm embarrassed by them. They make me sick to my stomach, in fact, and I deeply apologize to anyone I offended. He said that the humor was, quote, completely different a decade ago. He said that the world has shifted dramatically since he wrote those tweets. And he said, this kind of edgy shock comedy was not only acceptable, but a prevalent style. And then he mentioned influences like Joan Rivers and Karen from the sitcom Will and Grace. More tweets from Randy Rainbow. He said, I was an aspiring comedian in my 20s, working the stages in gay nightclubs where we said the most outlandish, raunchy things we could think of. I was searching for my comedy voice, my persona, and I was emulating styles and jokes of people that I was seeing in the mainstream. Any jokes that I tweeted out around this time were meant to be read in the voice of this character I created. I am incredibly sorry. I would never intentionally do anything to hurt anyone. I am in no way a racist. I'm in no way transphobic. I'm a gay Jew who was brought up in a very open, accepting family. And then he said, there is not a racist or intolerant bone in my body. And these all came out right around the time he released the Kamala song parody about 3 weeks ago. And that's when the news about his, you know, racist history emerged. So I'm torn. I'm hurt. I talk about a disillusionment. But I hear what he said. I know a lot of us said stupid things 10, 20 years ago. I'm not making excuses for him. And then I listened to his new video. His new video is called I Won't Vote Trump. But when you listen to it, listen to the first couple of verses, because I think he's talking about this situation. And then I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think. I mean, should I keep playing his stuff? Listen to this song, and we'll talk about it on the other side, all right? Here it goes. It's Randy Rainbow on the Nicole Sandler Show and the Progressive Voices Network.
Just to be clear, we are taping this. We are back. Mr. President, how are you?
I'm the football guy.
Oh, good. Sir, the election is around the corner, and it seems your campaign strategy has been to ramp up your divisiveness and bigotry, spread misinformation, even disparage the military.
The news is so fake.
Listen, I get it. I was once an aspiring comedian just like you. I posted offensive things for shock value.
It was a disaster.
Calm down. The difference was I was doing it satirically, you know, using irony and exaggeration to point out absurdity, saying and doing things through a persona that I wasn't actually saying and doing. You know, kind of like how I'm not really at the White House with you right now, see? It's just a green screen. But I changed my act when I realized there were actually awful things actually being said and done by actually awful people, just like you.
Look,
and once I had an actual platform, I vowed I would try my best to use it only for good. Aren't I great?
You know, I'm not sure.
And with November so close, there is one more vow I've taken. Would you like to hear it?
I don't have time.
Raise your tiny hand and repeat after me. I won't vote Trump.
I won't vote Trump.
No, there's not a chance in hell.
No, there's not a chance in hell.
I will try to make a difference.
I will try to make a difference.
Cause this isn't going well.
Cause this isn't going well.
So don't waste your bad breath on me. I'd sooner cast my vote for Cardi B. I'll never vote Trump, never vote Trump, never vote Trump. Not me. Come on, sing. I won't vote Trump.
I won't vote Trump.
I will jump through any hoop.
I will jump through any hoop.
And if someone tries to make me.
And if someone tries to make me.
I will throw a can of soup.
I will throw a can of soup.
If there's a chance that I could get this bloated Cheeto off my TV set, I'll never vote Trump, never vote Trump, never vote Trump. Not me. Not I. Girl, please.
Bud will make the country great.
Uh-huh.
Pence will take you on a date.
No, thank you.
What if they manipulate and make you not feel so inclined?
I've made up my mind. I won't vote Trump.
I won't vote Trump.
To the polls is where I'll drive.
To the polls is where I'll drive.
If I'm 18 years or over.
If I'm 18 years or over.
Cause I'm over 45.
Cause I'm over 45.
So sorry I've offended you. But when it comes to voting, I work blue. I'll never vote Trump. Never vote Trump. Never vote Trump. Not me.
Not me.
Everybody.
Not me. I won't vote Trump. I won't vote Trump. I don't want another four. I don't want another four. And if someone steals my mailbox. And if someone steals my mailbox. I will build 100 more. I will build 100 more. I won't vote Trump. I won't vote Trump. I will vote without delay. I will vote without delay. I will do what's necessary. I will do what's necessary.
Just to make you go away. And though I've made some past mistakes, there's one I won't, no matter what it takes.
The the best is yet to come.
I'll never vote Trump.
Never vote Trump. Never vote Trump.
Not me.
Not me.
Not me. No, girl.
Not me.
The news is so fake.
Girl, tell me about it.
Yeah. What did I do? There's Randy Rainbow. Yeah, you see, and I think he dealt with it in those first verses. I think that was his mea culpa. I'm seeing some comments in the YouTube chat. Yes, we still want Randy. We were different 10 years ago. I say stick with him. He screwed up. Lots of us do. He's doing the best he can to make up for his stupidity now. I think so. I think he's genuinely mortified by what he said 10, 15 years ago. I get it. We all make mistakes. And when you come back with a sincere apology, not a bullshit like, you know, sorry if I offended anybody. But no, what I said was really stupid and fucked up and I'm mortified. You know, that's a good start. Admitting when you have a problem. You know, the other question is, and David and I were talking about this this morning. What do you do? Do you not now listen to any Michael Jackson music because you know he was a pedophile? You know, I'm a big fan of Ryan Adams from the band Whiskey Town. And then I found out he was just a real, oh my God, asshole. I mean, not only to his now ex-wife, Mandy Moore, but to women. He was just horrible. So I've realized I don't like him as a person. He was always kind of an asshole. But I still like his music. All right. So I guess that's where we are. Okay, let's take a quick time out, take care of some business on Progressive Voices, and we'll come back on the other side with Marcy Wheeler, because we got a lot to talk with her about, so stick around. It's Nicole Sandler, NicoleSandler.com, and the Progressive Voices Network. And with Progressive Voices on a break, I'm trying to think what else I could play for you. I thought I pulled more stuff, and I kind of didn't. So I'm going to play you a couple of short video fun clips. All right. So, we'll start with this one just because I only played it once and I should play it again. That Midas Touch ad, voiced by yours truly. Here we go.
Trump pretended the coronavirus wouldn't come to our shores.
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
The risk to the American people remains very low.
He pretended the Democrats were overreacting.
And this is their new hope.
He pretended it would go away.
A lot of people think that goes away in April with the heat.
And then he pretended again.
It's also more deadly than your strenuous flus.
View this the same as the flu.
And again.
At some point, that's going to sort of just disappear.
And again.
It's going away now. It'll go away.
While Trump pretended, Americans faced real consequences. Nearly 200,000 dead and rising. Businesses closed. And now, as over 1,000 Americans die each day, what's the Trump administration's plan? Pretend that the pandemic is over. In a time of crisis, Americans can't afford to have a pretend president.
I wanted to always play it down.
Midas Touch is responsible for the content of this advertising.
From all the havoc he wreaks, now our choice is clear. Love is the only way to fight the lies with the truth. Here's what we gotta do. Let's all come together. Let's go. million souls with one heart. When things get so crazy, our power grows. Standing on the right side as we all unite. Each one rising up to do our part today.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener-supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
All right, we are back, and as I told you, last week I kept saying, God, I wish I would love to talk to Marcy Wheeler about this. Marcy Wheeler is a national security expert. She's an independent journalist who blogs at emptywheel.net, has been doing it on her own for these many years, and she's really good. She is one of my go-to people. When I start seeing things about national security or questions about Department of Homeland Security and a lot of these things that have come up in recent days, I go to emptywheel.net and read Marcy Wheeler. And she's usually very accessible to us. Problem is, in the not too distant past, Marcy Wheeler moved to Ireland. Yes, she left Michigan and moved to Ireland. And so when I wanted to talk to her last week about stuff that was going on, she's like, I'm in the middle of moving. And I just, things weren't, you know, going. She needed them to go. Finally, as I'm watching everything unfold over the weekend, I'm like, I got to get Marcy on for Monday. And sure enough, thankfully, she said yes. So let's get Marcy back on the line, shall we? Happy to welcome back to the show Marcy Wheeler, who joins us not from Michigan this time, but from Ireland. What are you doing in Ireland?
I escaped. I actually moved. My spouse is Irish, and for a bunch of personal reasons, we decided to move smack dab in the middle of a pandemic, and so we've been here, had to go through quarantine. The dog didn't. We did.
Wow.
But now we're all allowed out on the street in Ireland, and so here we are.
So how is it? What part of Ireland are you in? Is it beautiful?
It's beautiful. If I look out the window right over there, I can see the bay and the Aran Islands and some cows and a castle. So it's quintessentially Irish.
Wow. That sounds great. Do you have a lot of guest rooms? Because I have a feeling some of us may be wanting to join you pretty soon.
Not yet. We're still figuring out where we're going to land full time.
Wow. Well, good for you. I mean, obviously, I don't know the particulars, but if ever there was a good time to escape the United States, this is probably it. Because, I've been saying this for the longest time. It's like there is no bottom with this administration. Just when you think that Trump has reached the bottom, the basement can't go any lower, we find out there's a 10-level deep cellar. And then once you get to the bottom level of that cellar, it goes even further down. And we're seeing it all come to fruition now. I know, with your move, it's been hard to get a hold of you. Obviously, you're kind of busy and trying to get situated over there. But I reached out a couple of weeks ago because there was something to talk about. And then I reached out last week because there was another story. And now, oh my goodness, over the weekend, it seems like everywhere you turn, there's something that we could spend an hour on each individual topic. But let's talk about a few of the stories that broke just Friday night. For instance, the resignation of Nora Danahy And that name, people are going, who? Well, she's Durham's like number two in the investigation into the oranges, as Donald Trump would put it, of the Russia investigation, the oranges. Yeah. So why is this such a big deal?
Well, Barr has been suggesting for some time that he wanted some kind of results from this investigation before the election. And also for some time, journalists have been asking and saying, well, of course you're going to abide by DOJ guidelines on the election. And he effectively said, well, you know, Biden's not the target of this investigation, so I don't have to. I can release whatever I want to release. In the midst of that, and in the midst of what appeared to be a clear demand that Durham produce something mid-investigation, which is never done, right? If it's a serious investigation, you don't want to tell the targets of your investigation or the subjects of your investigation where you're going. Mueller didn't do it. Durham in past investigations hasn't done it, nor Danahy, who people might remember her. She was the one who conducted an investigation of Alberto Gonzalez's politicized hiring. And so she has done this kind of political investigation in the past, and she's done some political corruption work. She's a well-respected prosecutor. I would say probably more so than Durham, but she quit. She up and quit, and the sources in Durham's office, who were the source to the Hartford Current that broke the story, suggested that at least part of her concerns had to do with politics. Part of it probably also has to do with timing, because when Durham came in, he said, hey, you know, I need you for 6 months to a year, which meant she would have been done in May of 2020.
Oh, interesting.
That's how long Barr thought it would take to drum up the, I guess, the result that he wanted. And as I've written, that's interesting given what happened in the Mike Flynn case, too, because Barr ended up appointing a separate U.S. attorney to effectively go in, find documents that everyone already knew existed. Flynn knew they existed. The judge knew they existed. They had already been shared with DOJ IG and found not to be problematic. They were shared with Durham, and they're part of what Durham is investigating. But Billy Barr basically threw another lawyer at the issue so he could find documents everyone knew existed and use them as the excuse to submit the motion to dismiss Mike Flynn in May of this year, May 7th. And so, in other words, Barr had a schedule he thought was going to work, and Durham didn't move to his schedule, so he's already done something that makes it clear he's looking for one result that Durham hasn't found yet. He hasn't indicted people yet. He doesn't appear to be planning to before the election, and so Barr's looking for some kind of political report.
Now, so this was another development that happened just in the last few days, which is the recommendation, if I got this right, in Judge Sullivan, he's the judge who was overseeing the Flynn case. Then Barr and Justice Department comes in and says, we're going to let Flynn withdraw his guilty plea, even after he had already pleaded guilty and they were in the sentencing phase. Judge Sullivan said, hold on a minute. I'm the judge in this case. You don't tell me what to do. So I'm going to bring out a retired judge and let him basically represent the people in this. And the latest was that this retired judge who came in as the people's advocate said, no way do you let this, withdraw the charges. No way do you let this drop. We're going to go forward with it. Do I have that right?
Well, effectively what happened is Flynn immediately appealed the judge's non-granting of this motion to dismiss, which was legally ridiculous. I mean, normally you appeal or you complain about something that has happened. Before anything happened, Flynn complained about it not happening yet. It was reviewed by first a panel of the D.C. Circuit, including Naomi Rao, who is like the most hackish judge that Trump has appointed. They held for Flynn, then the entire court heard it and reversed the Naomi Rao opinion, which happens over and over and over at the D.C. Circuit these days. So basically all we're seeing is resuming the process that Sullivan laid out back in June to try and figure out what to do about this extraordinary really unprecedented request. And so we're seeing the amicus's last say, the government will have one more say, and then there's going to be a hearing later in the month where we'll hear about it. What was important in that filing, though, that you described is before the circuit, they were basically like, you know, you would need extraordinary proof that DOJ is up to no good to overcome what's called the presumption of regularity, that which is basically, for better or worse, they don't earn this, but DOJ, when they go into a courtroom, is presumed not to be operating like dodo heads, but they do, they get away with it. Mm-hmm. And in this case, one of the things that John Gleason, this retired judge, said is, look, since the time we were last briefing this, we've had one of Mueller's prosecutors say that Barr personally intervened because that's what Trump wanted. Mm-hmm. We've had Barr fire a U.S. attorney in New York basically to intervene in some cases. And he raised one more case. His filing was submitted hours before Danahy's resignation was reported. Otherwise, he might have pointed to that too. But so now he's got real evidence that mm-hmm. Barr has turned DOJ into Trump's, you know, basically defense attorney.
And that brings us to the next item on my list, which
I'm segueing so beautifully. You
really are, which is the Justice Department taking over Trump's personal defamation lawsuit from E. Jean Carroll about what she alleged back in the 90s. He raped her in a department store in Manhattan. He called her a liar, and it's based on him calling her a liar that she sued. This has nothing to do with his time in office as president, but now Bill Barr says, oh, I'm stepping in, we're taking over, because anything he does as, you know, as president, this is part of the presidency. So it's like she's suing the United States of America. No, she isn't, but okay, what?
Yeah, so what Barr is trying to do at a very low moment, I mean, the judge already decided that Trump was going to have to sit for a deposition and give some DNA. So normally when DOJ intervenes in cases like this, they do at the beginning. That mm-hmm. would have been 10 months mm-hmm. ago. But instead, with the judge finding that E. G. Carroll has a case and that Trump has to provide evidence, that's when Barr intervened. And oh, by the way, one of the people in the chain of command who did that, it was his first day on the job, right? So there's at least question about whether it's yet another example of whether he's replacing people in the DOJ hierarchy so that he'll have flunkies who will do whatever he demands. But in any case, and if that decision is approved, if that decision actually works, then it means that because the U.S. government can't be sued for defamation, the case is gone. The case is thrown out. Now, you know, I think that it's obvious. It is obvious this is an attempt to cover up rape. Mm-hmm. This is an attempt by DOJ to cover up alleged rape.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is really just an effort to push this beyond the election. And I think, you know, we'll see what happens with the legal fights, because there is a precedent that gets almost to where Trump is, although not quite. And that's what Barr is relying on. But I think the important thing is for the press to be quite honest, which is that Bill Barr, a self-described devout Catholic, by the way, is using the power of the federal government to cover up alleged rape.
It is stunning. It is absolutely stunning. But this goes to my theory of there is no bottom. Just when you thought Bill Barr couldn't get any more corrupt, this happens?
Oh, he can. Trust me. Oh. I've seen nothing yet.
Oh, boy. Oh, lucky us. We're speaking with Marcy Wheeler. Emptywheel.net is where you find her website. Emptywheel is her Twitter handle. Couple more things that are going on. There's a new story just taking hold in the last 24 hours or so. Big allegations from the Senate Republicans that Mueller's team wiped clean 27 cell phones that were assigned to them. And they're making a big deal out of this. Is there any there? What is the story about?
What they're doing is Judicial Watch FOIA'd for records having to do with Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. And what the records show is that all of the paperwork backs up the story that DOJ, IG, and Mueller and everyone else have been reporting for years about what happened with their phones. And basically what happened with their phones is they were processed normally and put back into use. But as part of that, one of the documents that was included in it was a log that probably started being kept in January of 2018 as the scandal around Strzok and Page really started, as basically as the same senators who are raising a stink today were raising a stink then without actually having read the texts. And what they're looking at is, what I believe they are looking at is any instance of irregularity with a phone, like, for example, Andrew Weissman, not unlike a lot of lawyers I know, seems to be totally idiotic with his cell phone. I know lots of lawyers like that. Uh-huh. I don't know if you do too, but if he's the one guy out of 40 Mueller people who can't manage a cell phone, then, you know, I think we're ahead of the game. But the important thing, or one of the important things about what is shown in that log, is at least starting in January 2018, these were logged as you went. So if you have a concern that Andrew Weissman has bricked his phone again, what you can do is go to DOJ and say, give us the texts that he's sent in the last 5 days since he bricked his, or just before he bricked his phone, and check what happened. You can go for a year after this information and go to Verizon, go to, because these were iPhones, you can go to DOJ's own logs to figure out what kind of texts were sent. And so what they're doing is taking a document that is not here purporting to record every single text that was sent by a Mueller staffer. It is instead there simply because it shows when Page and Strzok's phones were out-processed and what happened to them. That's the only reason that document is compliant with that FOIA. Had they wanted to ask a question about every single text that every Mueller person sent, then they would probably find a lot more documents. They also, by the way, this document shows is that Mueller's people were fairly meticulous, as they should be. I mean, normally in DOJ, if you send a text that is pertinent to a case, it's your job to copy it or email it or do something to make sure it shows up in the official record keeping at DOJ. Oh. What this log shows is somebody, at least starting in January 2018, somebody in Mueller's office was doing that persistently. And so what it shows is that DOJ, that Mueller's office was probably being more cautious with this, keeping better records with this than the rest of DOJ. But of course, in Chuck Grassley's mind, up is down and we're going to turn it into something else.
It's opposite world. That's where we are.
And, so it's opposite world in 2020.
Oh my God, on steroids. And we should mention that Peter Strzok's book was released this week. It's been sort of overshadowed by some of the other books that are out now. But boy, I saw a couple of interviews with him and he comes across as very credible, very knowledgeable, very normal, not nowhere near the sex-crazed nut job that Donald Trump tries to portray him as.
Yeah, I'm going to write in one of the 100 posts I'm trying to write today, I'm going to write a review of the book. And I'm going to argue that it's a book that we should have had 6 months ago. Mm. By the way, FBI delayed the release of this book by holding up his pre-publication review.
Oh, really?
But it's a book that if we had had 6 months ago or a year ago, we would have answers to questions that, for example, DOJ IG didn't bother to explain in the Carter Page IG report. So, for example, you know, there's still this big question about why were these four people targeted at the beginning of the investigation? And Strzok goes on at some length talking about what FBI does when they've got a question to answer, which is, in that case, who the heck got advance notice from the Russians that they were going to drop these emails to help Hillary Clinton? And he describes how they came up with the four names they came up with. And so it all makes a lot of sense. Had that been offered, you know, in congressional testimony by an IG report, the CISI report didn't even include anything like that, then, you know, it would have answered a lot of questions that I think were legitimately raised over the course of this two-year process, and we didn't get them. But the other reason I think that Strzok's book should have been released earlier, he says in there a couple of times, like, for example, had the texts, his text with Page, been held until the two IG reports pertinent to them were done, they would have been released along with the IG conclusion, which is that they couldn't have affected the investigations, even if they had tried to, and there's no evidence that they or anybody else did. I've said this, the only proof of somebody with a political bias spying in 2016 and the Carter Page report actually involves the Clinton Foundation investigation and an anti-Clinton FBI agent. But in any case, you know, he's right. If the rollout of this had been different, then you would have had the conclusion at the same time as you had the racy texts. And you might have had the texts out in context. I mean, there's a good number of them that pertain to entirely different investigations that, you know, Ron Johnson just made stuff up about, and that, you know, if you explain that in context. But the other reason I think the delay is really unfortunate is just because, you know, Peter Strzok was writing at a time where he could have been warning about what was going to happen to impeachment witnesses. Right? You know, he was writing at a time where he was a case example of what happens when people try and investigate Donald Trump. I mean, you're going to be called a traitor.
Yep.
Happened to him, happened to Lisa Strzok. Guess what? It happened to all the impeachment witnesses. And we are so, as you said, we are so far beyond the point where individual witnesses are being called traitors. We are to the point where Donald Trump is dismantling entire departments of this government and turning them, going back to Bill Barr, turning them into his own personal consigliere. Yes,
that's right. And in fact, today, I believe, Alexander Vindman is starting to make the interview round. So he's going to be speaking out. And they've gone after his family with a vengeance. I mean, his brother, who was not even involved, was also, you know, excommunicated from his role in the military, from his career, as just retribution. So, Marcy Wheeler, let me ask you one other thing. And I know I didn't see much about this at emptywheel.net, but my God, there's just so much stuff going on to cover. This one has to do with new allegations from a new whistleblower at the Department of Homeland Security by the name of Brian Murphy, who says some of Trump's political appointees at the agency, most notably Michael Caputo, have come in and altered the work of the scientists to more closely align with Donald Trump's made up bullshit facts, you know, his stance on where we are with this pandemic. Anything new in this whistleblower allegation?
Well, and there's a parallel whistleblower allegation, of course, coming from DHS, which says that, and I think you may have gotten the name of the whistleblower for the DHS one.
Gotcha.
But in any case, that one says that Chad Wolf and Ken Cuccinelli are rewriting intelligence to create the illusion that Antifa is as dangerous as white supremacists, which DHS doesn't believe to be true. They're altering evidence on Russian interference in the election. There are lying about the evidence of what migrants face, asylum, people seeking asylum, what they face in their home countries in Latin America, and also creating this false illusion that these people are all terrorists. And so, parallel things. But
okay,
what you're
so there was one is HHS, one is DHS. So there are two actually out there.
Well, and we could throw state in there as well. I mean, literally every single department of government that we know of has this going on, where top appointees are creating a second version of reality, which isn't reality. They're just inventing stuff to match what Trump wants reality to be. The HHS example is particularly concerning. One, because you've completely degraded the credibility of CDC.
Yep.
I mean, what they're doing is they're overriding the scientific reports that come out of CDC. And as a result, people are getting bad advice on how to deal with COVID. And, you know, you asked about being in Ireland. I'm in Ireland. We've reopened and kids are going to school. And yes, there are going to be some flare-ups, but people are resuming their life because Ireland was very serious about their crackdown and very serious about the way in which they're reopening. I mean, there's signs everywhere about how to stay safe under COVID that I never saw, even in Michigan, which had a sane governor running the state. And so, you know, it's basically this propaganda, particularly with regards to overriding CDC, is killing people.
Yeah.
It's killing people, right? It's going to lead to more people dying and more people taking crack cures and more people, you know, drinking bleach or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I think, yes, it is happening in virtually every agency we know about, right? But the fact that it's happening with scientific advice on how to survive COVID, I think is all the more damning. And oh, by the way, just to close the circle on everything, yeah. Michael Caputo, the guy who's doing this, was asked during his FBI interview details about something called Project Rasputin.
Okay. Project Rasputin, yeah.
Yeah, which is, of course, the name of a crack advisor to an old Russian czar.
Right.
And it was a project he was doing for Trump's election campaign. And it's not clear FBI was really happy about the questions they got. So Michael Caputi was right in the thick of all of this Russian interference in 2016. FBI didn't get answers on that. And now he's lying to people about how to stay safe from COVID.
Incredible. Keeping in line with the opposite world theme, we say incredible, unbelievable. But with this administration, it's totally believable. With any other administration, it would be inconceivable. But here we are in an opposite world. One last question for you, Marcy Wheeler. So when you're in Ireland where things are opening up again, what does the average Irish person say about things back here in the States right now?
I wouldn't say, I mean, I'm not meeting that many Irish people because, well, it's opened up. I'm not hanging out in bars.
Right.
I'm not hanging out in restaurants as I, you know, like there are still pretty serious restrictions about doing that here. I will say that wandering around the streets of Galway, I keep running into Americans and Canadians who've left years ago. And they're like, yeah, well, we're early refugees, as if there's going to be this big wave of Americans returning to my ancestors are Irish. And so it's pretty ironic that, you know, after 150 years, here I am returning to Ireland. And it's a much saner place to live at this point than the United States.
Sure. Yeah. And there are those of us very envious of you. I have no other, you know, ancestral home that I can go to. I guess I, you know, right of return, I could go to Israel, but I'm not sure that's a great place to go to right now either. My kid still has Kazakhstan citizenship because she was born there, but I don't think that's a place I want to send her to. We have nowhere to go. You're lucky you were able to get
it. I'm very, very lucky. I married well.
Well, congratulations on that. Marcy Wheeler, so thank you so much for staying on top of this from a distance. Maybe it gives you an even more objective view of the insanity going on over here. I'm glad we can still count on you at emptywheel.net. Thank you so much, Marcy. Always great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you.
There you go, Marcy Wheeler. Always great to talk to her, and we could have kept going. There's so much more, and more breaking news. Oh my goodness. I think this is going to be the big story we hear about tomorrow. So in the 4 minutes or so we have left, let me share this article with you from lawandcrime.com because it's just now being picked up by, the major outlets. I'm just going to read it to you because I couldn't possibly paraphrase this. I am so disgusted and horrified. Just read it. Several legal advocacy groups on Monday filed a whistleblower complaint on behalf of a nurse at an Immigration and Customs Enforcement Detention Center, an ICE camp, documenting, quote, jarring medical neglect within the facility, including a refusal to test detainees for the novel coronavirus and an exorbitant rate of hysterectomies being performed on immigrant women. It's as horrific as it sounds. The nurse, Dawn Wooten, was employed by the Irwin County Detention Center in Georgia, of course it is, operated by LaSalle Corrections, a private prison company, of course they are. The complaint was filed with the Office of the Inspector General for the Department of Homeland Security by advocacy groups Project South, Georgia Detention Watch, Georgia Latino Alliance for Human Rights, and South Georgia Immigrant Support Network. Here we go. Multiple women came forward to tell Project South about what they perceived to be the inordinate rate at which women in this detention center were subjected to hysterectomies, a surgical operation in which all or part of the uterus is removed. Additionally, many of the immigrant women who underwent the procedure were reportedly confused when asked to explain why they had the surgery, with one detainee likening their treatment to prisoners in concentration camps. Oh, I can't believe I'm reading this. Quote, recently a detained immigrant told Project South that she talked to five different women detained at ICDC between October and December of 2019 who had a hysterectomy done. This is according to the complaint. Quote, when she talked to them about the surgery, the women, quote, reacted confused when explaining why they had one done. The woman told Project South that it was as though the women were trying to tell themselves it's going to be okay. Another quote, when I met all these women who had surgeries, I thought this was like an experimental concentration camp. It was like they're experimenting with our bodies, the detainee said. According to Wooten, the whistleblower, ICDC, this concentration camp, consistently used one particular gynecologist outside the facility who almost always opted to remove all or part of his female detainee's uterus. Oh my God. All or part of the uterus of his female detainee patients. Everybody he sees has a hysterectomy. Just about everybody, Wooten said, adding that everybody's uterus cannot be that bad. This is just astounding. We've questioned among ourselves, like, goodness, he's taking everybody's stuff out. That's his specialty. He's the uterus doctor. I know that's ugly. Is he collecting these things or something? Everybody he sees, he's taking all their uteruses out or he's taking their tubes out. What in the world? Wooten also confirmed that many of the detained women have told her that they didn't understand why they were being forced to have the procedure, explaining that some of the nurses obtained their consent by simply Googling Spanish. It goes on. One woman asked three different people why they were performing the surgery on her. She got three different answers. Quote, she was originally told by the doctor that she had an ovarian cyst and was going to have a small 20-minute procedure done drilling three small holes in her stomach to drain the cyst. According to the complaint, the officer who was transporting her to the hospital told her that she was receiving a hysterectomy to have her womb removed. When the hospital refused to operate on her because her COVID-19 test came back positive for antibodies, she was transferred back to the camp where the nurse there said the procedure she was going to have done entailed dilating her vagina and scraping tissue off. Another nurse then told her the procedure was to mitigate her heavy menstrual bleeding, which the woman had never experienced. When she explained that, the nurse, quote, responded by getting angry and agitated and began yelling at her. The horrors. And I thought we were saying never again. This will likely push Trump's knowledge of how serious the pandemic was and lied to us about it off the front pages. But this is all his responsibility. It's all Trump. Make no mistake, it's all Trump. We'll continue with this tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Sorry to leave you with this piece of shit.